You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hey, before we get to the interview with pharmacy owner and operator Chris Antipas, who is the president and chief operating officer at Asti's South Hills Pharmacy right here in my hometown, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I did want to talk to you about Ultimed. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of this company, but they actually produce the UltiGuard pen needle, which is a kit that has been supporting the Pharmacy Podcast Network for some time. You work hard as a pharmacy owner to really do the right things for your patients. You're looking out for them. You're in the community. You're part of the community. I get excited when I know that there are products out there being designed that give you better services and outcomes for your patients. This is an FDA-cleared product. It provides 100 premium pen needles in a sharps container all-in-one. But more exciting for me also as a pro community independently owned pharmacy supporter and advocate is when you know that you're getting a better reimbursement on this product as well. And that is very cool to add. So that's the UltiGuard Safe Pack. I want you to look into this. Check it out, UltiGuardSafePack.com/podcast. That's UltiGuardSafePack.com/podcast. Please let us know, Pharmacy Podcast Network, what you think of this, the quality of this product. And we are excited to hear and talk with Chris on the Pharmacy Podcast Nation. Pharmacy Podcast Nation, welcome back to the Pharmacy Podcast. This is host and founder of the PPN, Todd Urey. If anybody knows me and have been following my career, started in pharmacy in 2004. I am a Pittsburgh guy, and I have been most excited about having the opportunity to interview community pharmacy owners. Not that I don't get excited about specialty or long-term care or compounding or even health system, but that community pharmacy seems to be that place in the portfolio of what we talk about that brings together so many different facets of the transformation of pharmacy. We just kicked off a brand new podcast with the Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association, Pat Apple and team, about Flip the Pharmacy and how many different independently owned community pharmacies are making transformations and big changes to their business. And I'm excited to bring on a champion in community pharmacy, somebody who is in Pittsburgh as well, which I'm excited about, Dr. Christopher Antipas. Is that the right way to say it, Chris?
That's right. You got it.
Antipas, and you are a graduate of the University of Pittsburgh back in the day, too.
That's right. Proud Pitt alum.
That's right. So before I get started and just digging into the business of pharmacy, I'd like you to tell the listeners a little bit about Asti's South Hills Pharmacy. You're celebrating your 15 years coming this summer, and just a little bit about yourself as well.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. So a little bit about Asti's. I guess I can start with myself. As you pointed out, I'm a University of Pittsburgh grad. I'm born and raised in the South Hills of Pittsburgh. Spent pretty much my whole life here, although a brief stint over, you know, maybe 10 years ago now, spent a couple years in Southwest Florida working in an independent pharmacy down there, and learned a lot from my colleagues. But my ultimate desire after graduation was to purchase a pharmacy, and I had pursued that essentially before pharmacy school ended through the few years after graduation when I ultimately made the plunge and purchased half of Asti South Hills Pharmacy, meeting and joining my now partners, Dan and Jen Asti, along with my father, and the four of us co-own Asti's, which is, as you pointed out, an independent retail pharmacy in the Mount Lebanon, Castle Shannon part of the South Hills. We also own a long-term care pharmacy here on site, as well as a specialty pharmacy called Valeda. Valeda Health is our nationally licensed accredited specialty pharmacy. So I do have some expertise and some experience in a few different areas of the pharmacy world, and try to leverage that as much as I can to really deliver as much value as possible. And I think that's where I would argue my mission really rests upon, delivering value to any potential stakeholder, certainly the patients that we serve primarily, but also the providers that we co-care for patients with, and the payers that are providing the coverage, and the pharmaceutical manufacturers that are making the product. So I think there's a way to really connect all of the P's in healthcare: payer, pharma, provider, patient, and pharmacist. And we look to show our value and demonstrate our value to every one of those stakeholders as much as possible.
Well, that's a great stage setter, because you're speaking our language. The primary listeners of the Pharmacy Podcast Network that own pharmacies are not the 20 plus, 30 plus year community pharmacy owners. They're really the new surge of intellect, of innovation in pharmacy ownership. You just mentioned owning a long-term care division, a specialty pharmacy division that's accredited. That's exciting, because now you are starting to dig into facets of pharmacy, which in the very opening of our discussion today, I kind of gave an outline of the transformation of pharmacy, and the survival of the community pharmacy owner needs to have pieces of so many different parts of what is our business, and how are we cultivating long-term relationships with patients and clients and communities that need us to be forward-thinking and stop chop-shopping the fast food pharmacy mentality of some of the national chains who don't have those relationships with their patients. So I'm going to take a pause, because Asti's really is impressing me and has for years. I've known about you and have read things in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette about the success of Asti's. There's a reason for that. If you're not delivering value to the patient, it doesn't matter if you have all the bells and whistles and technology and multi-dose adherence packaging and even doing pharmacogenomics, regardless, you must be doing something on a consistent basis to really embrace your patient. So let's talk about your patient first, and what's the theme? Why has Asti's been so successful for the last 15 years in your growth?
Sure. I think that it's really not a complicated formula. I look to Dan Asti, especially, and certainly Jen, who the two of them founded this pharmacy in 2005. It's pretty simple. It's build relationships, build trusting, honest, transparent relationships with your customers, with your patients, and follow through, solve their problems, remember their names, look them in the eyes. It's that simple. When you do that, people respond to it. I mean, if we think of how you react when you walk into a place that you've maybe been a couple times, a restaurant, and the hostess or the owner, the manager, no less, if they look at you and say, "Hey, how are you, Todd? It's good to see you." It changes your demeanor. It changes how you feel. So you kind of gravitate towards that. And I think the foundation of our success is built on that. And we've just created this atmosphere where that's just how we treat everybody. And when you feel loved, for lack of a better way to put it, you're willing to drive past multiple pharmacies to get to Asti's. Or you're happy to have Asti's deliver your meds to you, because even when you have that interaction over the phone, it feels like a very warm, inviting experience, more so than what, you know, the alternative experience is, where you show up to the counter and every single time you're there 3 days a week. And every single time you show up there, it's what's your name and date of birth and what allergies do you have? It's just the approach is very different in our pharmacy as compared to our chain competitors.
Chris, who on your team helped to build out your specialty pharmacy division, and when did that happen from the inception of the organization?
So the specialty pharmacy was built out by myself. That was a mission that I was able to take on, certainly with the support of my team, individuals. Samantha Pizzarella, who's my director of operations, was very instrumental in this. But we felt this took place in 2016. Really, it started in 2014, 2015. Sovaldi came to the market. We service a fair HIV population, a sizable HIV population, because of our very intimate and dedicated customer service approach that is very private and really a concierge. So our HIV patient population has grown over the years, and those individuals, a number of them were co-infected with Hep C. So we began seeing prescriptions that came through for this novel breakthrough medication, and in a number of instances, we weren't able to fill the prescriptions because there were payer limitations for specialty. And we'd seen that here and there, but we really weren't exposed to specialty pharmacy is not new. If you're from the Pittsburgh area, Statlanders, Fisher's Pharmacy, a number of these innovators, these are decades old. The specialty pharmacy was really born in Pittsburgh, but even in 2014, it was still very not well known, at least in my experience. So as we became more knowledgeable and educated, we realized that, we could try to do specialty pharmacy out of a retail pharmacy, but to really play in the space, so to speak, you needed to have a little bit of a bigger footprint. You needed to have a dedicated workflow. You needed to achieve accreditation, which becoming accredited is not really easy if you're commingling a $30,000 drug with a 30-cent lisinopril prescription. There's just way too much noise to meet accreditation standards. The retail pharmacy documentation software platforms were not sufficient from a clinical documentation perspective for both accreditation standards, as well as, in my conversations with pharma and with payers, the reporting that they need from their partners in limited distribution arrangements is just way more than what a computer, like a typical retail pharmacy management system, could offer. So we went through this long exercise over the course of 2015 and into 2016. And then at the end of 16 into 17, we launched Valeda Health as a specialty pharmacy. We have positioned it now today where we're licensed in all states. California is pending. We have accreditation through ACHC. We're awaiting, unfortunately, it's been pushed back, our on-site for URAC. We use a dedicated specialty software platform, and this has been a pretty significant investment. But as you pointed out, a lot of independent pharmacies are out there trying to compete in specialty, but it's very difficult to do so without making this significant investment. And that's just the highlight of why we went down the road that we did and where we are today, which I would argue is in a great position because, as you know, the independent specialty pharmacies are really disappearing. Avella, purchased by United Healthcare, Briova, they're part of the Briova family now, and same with Diplomat,
yeah,
gone. They're with Briova. So, I mean, just if you have a conversation with any specialist provider, oncology, rheumatology, you name it, if you say some of these, and I'll refrain from using the names of our competitors, if you say some of these really large specialty pharmacy names, it's like you can see they visibly change. They get so agitated and irritated at the thought of having to pick up the phone and call those other pharmacies because of how poor their experience is. And that to me is telling that there's tremendous opportunity in the space, provided you can navigate the number of barriers that are put in place by some of the large PBMs to prevent us from playing in the sandbox.
Yeah, you can't wake up one morning and just decide you want to be a specialty pharmacy and do it correctly. You're dumping millions of dollars into your organization. You're investing in education. You're investing in that certification, in being able to dig into a disease state start cataloging all of that information, patient after patient, in order that they're being treated as they need to be based on REMS reporting and other things that you must do for the manufacturer relationships. So this is exciting that this is a Pittsburgh-based community pharmacy that has a long-term care division, a specialty division. Let's shift gears and talk a little bit about technology, because that's where I started off with Pittsburgh-based SoftRaters, who's now still one of the leaders in long-term care pharmacy management software platforms. And they've gone through tremendous evolution since 2004 and got gobbled up by MHA. But it's so fun to hear Pittsburgh success stories. And from a technology perspective, how are you managing those disease states with the mounds and mounds of data that you have to keep in track of with regards to conditions, but also the intensity of getting something paid with pre-authorization and being able to rely on maybe even a hub service. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, so as it relates to the specialty side, that's where the investments in technology matter. So we use ScriptMed as our software platform, and I'm proud to promote them. They've been a great partner of ours. They're under the Inovalon family, which is a very large data analytics company based out of DC, and they work with a number of health plans for doing various jobs, but ScriptMed as a platform really houses pharmacy operations and clinical management under one roof, all completely integrated. So it was a very large and daunting task to configure and build the system out, because it's completely, it's a blank slate for the client to build their clinical programs into. But in doing so, we invested the time and energy and resources to do that. So now it's really essentially an automated process where, in line in our workflow, we are interacting with our patients, asking questions, documenting their responses, and based on their responses, various clinical activities are then triggered. It could be a follow-up phone call in so many days. It could be outreach to the prescriber. It could be adding special documentation. I mean, there are a number of factors that could play out as a result of a clinical conversation with a patient, but it's driven through our technology. And again, these are the things that are necessary to be in this particular space, because you need consistency and you need to report on all of these important things. So to produce meaningful reporting, you have to have the right technology. And we've leveraged some of these concepts to our retail and long-term care pharmacy, because the patient care aspects are consistent across the need, whether it's specialty or non-specialty. Certainly, stakes are higher on specialty, and your point about authorizations and getting coverage and payment and financial assistance, you need to be gathering more information to be able to facilitate those processes. But we use the same approach on our long-term care side and our retail side. It's just leveraging different tools, and it may not completely integrate, because, as you know, those are challenges. The compatibility and technology communicating with one another is not always as we hope it will be. But nevertheless, we've taken the time to step back from the operation, something that I know it's not easy to do for many pharmacy owners. And it's why I feel privileged to be a part of the ASTES team, because the foundation that Dan and Jen were able to build with the pharmacy, we have 10 plus pharmacists in this building at any given moment. So I don't have to be focusing on every detail of the operations and compliance. I'm afforded some time to step back and really get a better understanding of process, get a better understanding of the needs of the various stakeholders, so that we can build our workflow and our overall operation around some of those key ingredients.
So more than the greater Pittsburgh area, ASTES is able to service other patients that have a specialty disease state that need an expert in that understands the therapy and the different levels that may change therapy moving forward, the collaboration with the physician, and then other things that come into really being a specialty pharmacy provider. So, Chris, that's exciting.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I will tell you, it's not ready for prime time, but the I have a firm belief that the community pharmacist is possibly the most important provider of healthcare services in their community, certainly for pharmacy. Even though I know how to take care of patients, even though I know how to, build relationships, and I know clinically how various specialty therapies should be utilized and the risks and all the important clinical factors, I fundamentally believe that a pharmacist in St. Louis, Missouri, can take better care of their patient that lives in St. Louis, Missouri, better than I can, because I think that the sense of community goes a very long way to improving clinical outcomes. And so we have built Valeda, our specialty pharmacy, with an ultimate goal of being able to connect community pharmacy to specialty in a way where the community pharmacist does not have to go through the arduous and rigorous process that we went through to play in this space, but at the same time, they can care for their patients and be compensated to do so. So, as I said, it's not ready for prime time yet, but you'll be on my list of individuals to notify when we can talk about the program that we're trying to bring to market with, again, that core fundamental belief that the community pharmacist, regardless if it's a very, benign or acute condition, we'll say acute, not benign, because there are some very serious acute circumstances, but if it's an acute issue, if it's a chronic issue, if it's a specialty issue, the community pharmacist is best positioned and should be involved in that care in some way, shape, or form. And I want to change the paradigm of specialty pharmacy that has really excluded that personal, intimate touch point that I've seen play out to be a very critical role in how well we take care of our patients in my retail pharmacy. So maybe more to come on that subject at some point here in the near future.
Well, we want to hear about it. And if it's anything with regards to that evolution of where a community pharmacy has come from, adding in that long-term care, adding in that specialty, and then the technology that you're leveraging, that's exciting stuff. That's right up our alley and helping to promote that, and especially the fact that it's Pittsburgh. I mean, goodness gracious, go Pittsburgh.
Sure.
Infectious disease is part of your initiatives under the specialty, and we're in the midst of an unprecedented experience in my 47 years, and I'm sure yours as well, with this pandemic and COVID-19. And what do you know, Pittsburgh is on the forefront of developing those vaccines. And is there anything you can share with us about that, of any of your knowledge of what's happening?
Yeah, I would say that certainly being an essential business, working the front lines here in the pharmacy, you learn a lot, you see a lot, we're asked a lot of questions. We have a lot of people out there that are afraid, that are concerned. Millions of people are losing their jobs. In addition to my pharmacy work, I also act as the director of pharmacy services for Henderson Brothers, which is an insurance brokerage consulting firm in Pittsburgh, an incredible company, a phenomenal organization. Anybody in the region that is looking for tremendous insurance brokerage and consulting services should absolutely look at Henderson Brothers. And through that relationship, I've been working with a number of employers in our region on this issue as well. So I'm looking at it personally from an employer who has employees that are working day to day in the trenches, so to speak. But I'm also taking the position of an advisor trying to help other very large employers navigate these difficult times. So I've been fortunate to be exposed to a number of resources that have helped me kind of get a sense of our place in all of this. And unfortunately, we're in this situation that we are, and these protective measures, the social distancing and the shutting down of various businesses and gatherings is to save lives. And until we get more data to really understand how many people are actually infected and how, you know, understand a more accurate picture of the percentage of those that will be infected that will ultimately require intensive care. Until we get to that point, I think we're stuck in limbo. But as it relates to pharmacy, I think that is where pharmacy has a real opportunity to shine. If you even move past the fact that community pharmacies across this country are providing tremendous support, like home delivery, they're giving away hand sanitizer that they're compounding, they're doing curbside pickups, they're working around the clock to ensure that their patients don't go without medicine. Set all of those tremendous things aside for now and think about the important critical role that pharmacists can play in both, first and foremost, testing, and I'll touch on the testing. I'm sure you've seen some of the recent news on testing and pharmacists, yep. But then also on the vaccination side and the fact that pharmacies are incredibly well positioned to help, you know, get us through these difficult times once one of those vaccines finally hits the market. But to touch on the testing aspect, HHS from a federal level made the announcement this past week that they are giving pharmacists authority to administer COVID-19 testing. And this, I think, is a huge advancement in the recognition of pharmacists as providers, because we can really shine and demonstrate, again, our reach, our access, and our expertise in handling something as serious as this viral pandemic that we're facing. My pharmacy at ASTI's, we currently do hold a CLIA waiver, which permits us to do certain low complexity testing here at the pharmacy. And so we're certainly ahead of the curve as it relates to conducting tests. We don't necessarily need any special authorization, but I think that the announcement by HHS, certainly there are state restrictions that will apply, but I do feel that pharmacists will play a very important role in administering these tests for the antibodies that could be rapid 10 to 15 minutes results that can lead to individuals getting back to the workplace and, you know, phasing out of this lockdown, so to speak, that we've been in over the last, you know, several weeks.
You know, you made a statement about pharmacists, and I always consider them the hub of healthcare based on all of the commands coming back to that pharmacist seeing their patient 10 to 1 to the physician. And when you put together that physician pharmacist team with a community pharmacy who understands the patient, who understands their background, their family, their history, you know, what they're going through, possibly, you know, anything from that personalization, which makes a difference in care. I have to think of the stats of us as a nation being impacted by a $528 billion medication therapy issue that's causing that much of a cost to our healthcare system, causing an additional with non-optimized drug therapies that aren't being managed by that collective team in the way that it should, causing that 275,000 deaths per year. And these are stats that we pulled from 2016 CDC guidelines. And what's really interesting is when we hit the hot point in time with this COVID-19, community pharmacists did not trip, did not drop the ball. They're already used to this mode of operation. The time has increased, and the time that community pharmacists are spending at their businesses and at their stores and in their communities, that's definitely increased. We've heard of a 30 to 40% time increase with hands-on and staff hands-on, and it's actually moving upward nationally, but not dropping the ball because they understand. You understand what the community needs. And when those people come in and look you in the eye, when that patient and that customer who's been your customer for 10, 15 years looks you in the eye and says, you know, Chris, I heard about this rumor and I heard about boiling water and I heard about this myth, and they look you in the eye, when you say something to them, their blood pressure literally gets to be dropped because they're not worried about it, because they believe you, because right. they've been using you for years. And I think that is going to come out of this terrible situation. I think there's going to be a lot of good for pharmacy in general and community pharmacy in general to come out when you have Senator Chuck Schumer making comments about pharmacists, you know, not being medical professionals. And I think he misspoke. I don't really think he thought that through, but I think there's going to be a lot to come of, and I think we'll see accelerated efforts in provider status and what that means, and even digging down into the specialty of what a pharmacist does, because there's so many sectors of pharmacy in of itself. But Chris, you're the poster of what that community pharmacy could evolve into, based on the technology utilization, based on your staff, based on your readiness, based on the fact that you're mixing in specialty, long-term care, community pharmacy. That's exciting, because this needs to be repeated throughout the nation. If you're going to stay in business, if you're going to be a pharmacy owner for the next 2 to 5 years, and the transformation is coming like a tsunami, if you're not on top of that wave and you're not surfing that wave, it's going to be hard to mitigate what's happening with PBM reform and waiting for that reform to happen, because that's the next subject I just want to ask you about, kind of insights on how do we punch that PBM model in the face and really take it down in chunks because of what's taken place, unfortunately, within the last 15 years with the evolution of the PBM.
Yeah, I think that this is the million-dollar question. And you know, I don't know that my response to this is maybe the most popular because it bucks tradition, but I think that we're fighting a losing battle, fighting the PBMs. I mean, it's evident. There's not a single pharmacist that I can think of that I've come across, and you got a lot of listeners here. If anybody can challenge this, I'd love to know about it, but you look at your remittances, they're not getting any larger. They continue to shrink. That is evidence of a losing battle. You know, maybe it's a losing war. We might win a few battles here and there. But the only way that I see us overcoming this paradigm of pharmacy reimbursement is to sidestep the PBM and express our value to the sponsors of the programs that are being administered by the PBM. Okay. The PBMs are a middleman in a arrangement where a sponsor is ultimately footing the bill. That could be an employer, that could be the state, it could be the federal government. Those are the individuals, those organizations and those entities are the ones that need to see the value that we can bring on managing total cost of care. And being an employee, an employer consulting for pharmacy, I have spoken to these stakeholders in every level, employers that have tens of thousands of employees, global companies, and I can see what their challenges are, and their challenges are managing rising medical costs. Pharmacy has typically been just a non-starter. It's been 10%, 15%, maybe 20%. Of their total overall spend in healthcare as an employer. And as a result, they've not really cared much. They've given the reins, the keys to the PBM. The PBM gets some nice rebates, and they don't really question much beyond that. But now that pharmacy is growing as a major concern for employers, due to specialty pharmacy, now their antenna is up. They're really concerned about what's going on in pharmacy, and it is going to allow us to open up a conversation to, you know, you're really focused about on specialty, which we have some strategies here that we can manage specialty better for you. But if you look on this other side of the equation, 5% of your employees are driving 50% of your healthcare costs. And a lot of that is due to unmanaged chronic disease. And we at the community pharmacy are really, really good at managing chronic disease. That is evidenced through CPESN, which I'm sure you're familiar with, and hopefully most of your listeners, if not all, the Community Pharmacy Enhanced Service Network, which is a clinically integrated network of community pharmacies, 2,500 pharmacies plus across the country. that have demonstrated their ability to improve outcomes for their patients. Pennsylvania, our chapter of CPESN is called the Pennsylvania Pharmacist Care Network, PPCN, which is the under the direction of the Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association. And again, in this platform, community pharmacists can come together, demonstrate this value to the ultimate sponsor, not the PBM. The PBM doesn't care. It's the people that are paying the PBM that care if you're able to reduce medical expenditure for their chronically ill. And CPESN, PPCN give us the platform to express that value on a scale that can meet their needs. And as I'm sure you've learned over the last 45 minutes of this discussion, I have a very analytical approach. I like to get into the weeds and understand all aspects for all parties involved. And it is my opinion that this strategy, this pathway, is the only hope for community pharmacy to thrive again. Because right now we're struggling to survive, but I think the future where we're compensated for the value that we bring, we will be thriving, provided we can make it there. And that's the battle that I'm very willing and committed and invested in waging from here on out.
Absolutely. Dr. Stephanie McGrath with Pitt and Dr. Brandon Antonopoulos also with Pitt, they helped to launch the new podcast, Beyond the SIG, which is part of the PPA's effort and the organizations that kind of have rolled out of what the CPESN kind of started out with, and Troy Tragstad and his team. I'm so excited about that because the consultative side of pharmacists, which they've really been doing that for years. I mean, it's not anything new to the pharmacist, but it has been packaged and communicating that to the public and to the payers and to CMS of what that means. And it's solidifying what community pharmacists have been doing forever, but now it's breaking it down just like your billing codes through an electronic health record and what a physician bills for. There's a whole slew of services that pharmacists have been doing in long-term care, in specialty, in community, where there wasn't payment for those actions. And that really needs to be defined. And in my opinion, I think it's going to save our healthcare system millions, if not billions of dollars, based on the fact that adherence comes from the pharmacist. That's where medication adherence lives. And when you start building out these consultative services and start helping pharmacists be paid for those services, this is an exciting time to be in pharmacy. That's why I'm so honored to interview pharmacy owners like yourself, people that are really innovating and pushing this.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I wholeheartedly believe that this is our future. I think that, you know, I view a future of pharmacy where we don't need to buy and sell drugs. I believe that dispensing of the medications is a critical touch point that we can leverage to have that engagement with the patient. It doesn't mean that with every patient you have to sit down for 5, 10, 20, 45 minutes and counsel them and be paid for that. I think it's a combination of those circumstances for those that need it. But beyond that, it's just being accountable to the adherence. As you pointed out, many pharmacists, they say, well, I can't force my patients to take their meds. And I've heard this argument from pharmacists who are, you know, rejecting this idea, this notion of value-based pharmacy and pay-for-performance, et cetera. The reality, though, is that you can influence adherence through leveraging your relationship with your patient. And if we can unlock that sort of value through services like clinical med sync, through adherence packaging, through our home delivery, through simple follow-up phone calls once or twice a month, and remove the burden of having to buy low and sell high and get caught up when you get paid the low cost. If we can remove those parts of our business and add the amount of effort and time and energy we'll be able to put forward towards our patient care services, I have no doubt, like, we'll be the most successful pharmacy on planet Earth. I would love to forego contract review and MAC appeals. Somebody else buy the drug. I'll just dispense your drug and take care of your patient and make sure that their CHF is under control, their diabetes, so on and so forth. And I'm not just crossing my fingers and hoping that that's the future of pharmacy. I'm using every ounce of energy in my body to make that future a reality. And I think that it will really bode favorably for any community pharmacy that appreciates and takes the responsibility of patient care seriously, which I know are countless tens of thousands of pharmacists out there in every, you know, every community in this country.
Absolutely. Bravo to that as well. And I'm curious as to the models between the manufacturer, the wholesaler, and the pharmacy, and how those relationships are going to change. And we've seen lots of support coming from the AmerisourceBergen and the McKesson and the transformation of Cardinal Health and how that's all going to play out. But I'm interesting to see how they're going to back up those new types of services in the payment arrangement per se, certainly not new services in the realm of relationship between pharmacist and patient, but definitely new in the realm of it all being paid for. So this will be interesting to watch how this plays out.
Yeah, everybody's got to reinvent themselves. The entire model needs to be disrupted. You know, there are definitely parties like those large wholesalers that you described. There's a lot of risk. A lot of organizations have made a lot of money in the pharmacy industry for a long time. And that the well is dry. Community pharmacies are being slaughtered out there, so to speak, figuratively speaking, with the reimbursement. And you see it, it's weekly. You know, prominent pharmacies that have been around for over a century are closing shop. And it's just unfair to those communities that are losing the staples that have served generations and generations. So I think the time is now. The large wholesalers, PSAOs, you know, every distributor out there, they need to find a new model that can facilitate a different kind of supply chain economics, essentially, where the pharmacies can be free to do the great care that they do on a daily basis and not have to worry about, you know, keeping the lights on. So I'm happy to fight that fight and appreciate you and others that are advocating for that. And we'll get there by a matter of will, if nothing else. But I think that that's our future, and I'm excited to be practicing at this time.
Absolutely. If you're listening and you've been inspired listening with Chris and the conversation about ASTI South Hills Pharmacy, please go to astirx.com. That's ASTIRX.com. The link to ASTI South Hills Pharmacy will be in the show notes. Chris, this has been fun. I hope to have you and your team back. Maybe we can recruit Dan to jump on a podcast, or Samantha or Shannon or Ashley or so many of your, actually, I know Terry Crow. I actually did a small consultant work with her when they were building the Hill District Pharmacy through, I believe it was Duquesne University.
That's right.
And that was an exciting time. It was exciting for me because I was just starting into my technology consulting business and got partially hired by the organizations, but very exciting times. I really appreciate this interview. We're going to put in, like I said, an opportunity for pharmacists to reach out to the ASTI team and maybe even ask some questions. There's so many listeners that we have that when we release a podcast like this, there's lots of comments and questions to, once again, this collaboration needs to continue to happen so that we can help community pharmacy succeed.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally support it. I'm proud of my team. All the good things that we talked about are really possible because we have a tremendous team that we're all committed to the same common goal of taking care of our patients. And so anybody out there that has thoughts, questions, if we share the same philosophies of taking care of others, just drop me a line. I'm happy to share any sort of insight I can to help you achieve that. So I appreciate being invited here and really look forward to continuing our relationship and learning from you as well, because I know you have a wealth of knowledge and information you've gathered over the years.
Yeah, it's been exciting and it's been an honor to, we have 44 pharmacist podcasters now in 30 stations and we're listened to in 127 countries and about a recurring 80,000 listeners. So it's exciting to be in this space. And we started in 2009 before I think my mother and my brother were the only listeners back then.
Well, those are two great listeners. I mean, you can't get better than that. They'll be definitely critical of your poor performance if they disagreed, I would imagine.
That's true. Chris, thanks so much for being on the Pharmacy Podcast Nation and sharing your success story as an ongoing success story. It's a continuous evolution, but we really appreciate you.
No, thank you for having me. Everybody out there, stay safe. Take care of yourselves and each other, and God bless.
Okay, we're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation. We had special guest Chris with Asti Pharmacy, Asti's South Hills Pharmacy in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Go Pittsburgh, proud of Pittsburgh. And we thank you so much for listening.